We're talking still, and we will be until Passover, about the three leavens, the leaven of Herod, the leaven of the Sadducees, and the leaven of the Pharisees. We're concentrating on the leaven that manifests itself as the belief system that you lack something. The only way you can believe you lack something is if you believe that you are a separate entity. If you are connected with life, you cannot, by definition, believe that you lack something. You understand? If you knew you were in the body of Christ, and members in particular, it would be impossible for you to be, or to think, or to conceive of yourself in a state of lack. Now, in any way, the only thing that lack can be then, from a spiritual standpoint, from a reality standpoint, the only thing that what you perceive as lack can be is momentary chastisement. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, even as a father chasteneth the son in whom he delighteth.
I've been feeling full of it, all three, today especially. And it's weird. I've been praying for peace, but that's what I get.
That's right.
What is this?
Basically, just want to go out.
You pray for peace.
Oh, love. Okay.
What happens?
I don't know. I just had that overwhelming feeling.
You pray for love. Yeah, everybody wants to go check out. Again.
Yeah, pray for bad stuff.
The bottom line is, if there's any place else to check out to, that's what you'll have to do.
Okay.
But you remember we've talked the idea of the only evidence that of the work of God in your life isn't some grandiose revelation. The only evidence of the work of God in your life is the efficacy or the ability or the willingness in you to wait, to endure, to take off this incessant, frenetic activity of your mind, to be able to sit and say, Father, I accept where I am and I wait gladly.
It's like what you and I were talking about last night with my aunt and uncle. They're in a situation where he's been fired from a job three times now that we know of, four times. He's like a hospital administrator kind of position. And it's just devastated him. I mean, they don't know what's wrong. They just don't know. He's never been told. Like this last time I was told that she just said, I don't like your management style. You're fired. And he'd only been there like,
I gotta write that one down.
3 or 4 months. And he had, you know, collections were up and he had been doing everything he was supposed to do, and I can't really emphasize how devastating this is to the family. It's my mom's sister, and mom said that Jeannie is saying in 2 months, there will be nothing. That's what it sounds like.
Tyra's family is like idyllic. I mean, if you had to go out and find the best WASP family, you know, with nice little brothers and sisters and everybody cares for each other and some professional people and semi-professional people and all the cousins get together and they take group pictures all the time.
Music.
Oh yeah, everybody's sort of, they're sort of like idyllic family life kind of thing. And yeah, it's the Waltons.
Not really.
But what the fruit of it is that in this case, their family can't deal with, there's no mechanics to deal with this concept that this important member of their family has failed. He's been fired 4 times. It's the idea that, I mean, can you, you know, nobody in here would be devastated if somebody got fired.
Well, that's the point I wanted to make. It's like, you wouldn't see, well, I mean, you know, sure, I mean, if I got fired, I'm sure I'd be upset and everything, but it's like it wouldn't be the lack that they're seeing. Just
minutes from now to hold it up.
Yeah.
Because even though we don't yet understand it, we don't see all its implications, we understand 1,000 times more than we think we do.
And what's so sad for me, I mean, this is really bothering me a lot, but, you know, I can't say to them the things that can be said here. I mean, because there's no place for it.
Well, let's look at what Paul says. Paul says, "I rejoice in verse chapter 4, verse Philippians chapter 4, verse 10. Well, verse 9. Those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, now at last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity." What he's talking about is that he's just received a lot of funds for Paul, because he had just given everything he had to Jerusalem. And so he says, though, that "not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me." What he's saying is the word "learn" there is a great word in the Greek, because it's a technical term that means that he has learned by living it. He's experienced it. He has learned that whatsoever state he finds himself in, therewith to be content. Therein is how you combat the leaven of Herod, or the leaven of seeing lack. You have learned, and that's what happens by abiding. That's what we have found out. There's 100 things that used to bother you terribly that no longer bother you. And you don't really, you didn't, there's no plan for it. There's no little program for it. There's a whole bunch of stimulus that would cause you to go into paralysis. Stimuli that would cause you to go into paralysis that no longer affect you, but you don't remember that. But what is happening is you are learning in whatsoever state you find yourself therewith to be content. You haven't yet learned it. You are in the process of learning. But do you understand how that relationship destroys, how that learning or understanding or seeing by experience destroys leaven? Because otherwise, you could preach this crap all day long. Right? You're not supposed to feel that way. And all it does is make you feel more lack.
I don't feel right.
Yeah, that's just more lack.
I understand correctly.
That's just more lack. So pretty soon, your attempts to get rid of leaven only fill you with more leaven. Why? So that's, and it's symptomatic. It's systemic. It's systemic in the beast. So that sin would become exceedingly sinful. You understand? Now.
You're saying only by abiding.
Only by abiding can you know these things. Otherwise, again, you know, Brian is in a state. Brian loves to be in a state. This Brian. State of Texas, but most of the time he thinks he's in a state of anxiety. And he's got to combat, he's got to go fight dragons. And he convinces himself of its validity. And so God's now placed him in an impossible situation. If he goes and fights a dragon again and gets caught, he goes to jail for life. I mean, talk about...
A narrow path.
The path is kind of narrow. Huh? Yeah, he clipped your wings, he cut off your wee-wee, and he did all kinds of things. I mean, it's...
Broke your leg?
Yeah.
Walking down the straight and narrow with a limp.
No, but it's worse than that. You've heard me say it, maybe Brian hasn't. When a young lamb kept running away and getting into trouble, What the shepherd would do is he reached down and he broke the leg of the lamb. And then he carried the lamb in that a loop around his heart that we, of that of the shepherd's cloak, and that was under his right arm, or his left arm, under next to his heart. And if you don't, you may not understand it, but that's where you're being carried right now. But again, it's the reason he did that is because Brian hasn't learned in whatsoever state he finds himself there with to be content. He's learned everything but that.
Created a problem with Israel.
Yeah. He'll, if he doesn't feel lack, he'll go invent lack.
True.
And he does that for another reason. Why? Guilt. So now we're coming to another secret. The tie-in between guilt and the seeing of lack. I think that's going to hit any of you right upside the head. Okay, what about, what's the relationship between guilt and lack? In the world, there is none. You understand? In the world, you know, there's no such, really.
This is what you feel when you believe you lack.
Yeah, but there's no such, there's no relationship. You know, you might be guilty because, but it's not guilt. I mean, it's you may regret something, you may feel sorry about something, but it isn't really guilt, the kind of guilt that motivates you. And but what we're talking about here can only be seen after you've crossed into the promise, where you have a belief system that says you lack. If you have a belief system that says you lack something in the world, then by definition, you will just go take care of it. You understand? Guilt, the things associated with guilt, are never really seen because they're always covered over by acquiring. And it can be acquiring knowledge or acquiring religion or acquiring something, but guilt can never truly be seen in the world because it's covered over by the act of acquisition. Now, what happens when you cross into the wilderness? The wilderness is a state of being in which there are no options. And you hate it with everything in you. If you have any options left in your life, then you're still in the world. If you are in a place where you have no options in reality, then now guilt can begin to do its work. Because if you don't have an option of the ability to do something about your guilt, then you'll have to face it. You understand me? Now, there are some of you that are just beginning to understand what that means. Right now, for the first time, you've been here for who long knows how long, but for the first time in your life, you're beginning to face guilt. And you don't know what to do with it. When guilt will do everything it can to keep from being exposed. It will become a billionaire. It will become a great writer or a great something. Guilt will do anything and everything to keep from being exposed. Do you understand that guilt cannot be seen in the world? As long as you're in the world, you'll only have regret, and that's not guilt. Even the blood of Christ cannot cover guilt in the world. Guilt, the blood in the world, only is on the outside of the doorpost. It keeps the death angel from smacking you. You remember? So there's no resolution of guilt while you're yet in the world. That's why religion can't work. That's why all these nice little buildings, they do nothing about guilt, because there's no admitted guilt. There's only little statements, oh, praise God, I used to be bad, now I'm good. It's putting frosting on your own dung is exactly what it is. But here, when you come here, for the most part, you don't have any more options. Does that communicate with any of you? If you have, I mean, nobody in their right mind. We've covered this before. But the rest of you would be absolute fools for coming here and putting up with his crap if you had anything else and any other place to go. I mean, I wouldn't put up with me.
I wouldn't. If I had some place to go, I'd go. But I got no place to go.
But don't take that wrong, okay?
Yeah. Don't take it personally.
Well, yeah, I mean, geez, Biff, I really like
it. Like this
is kind of... You can only deal with guilt, and hear this. We've never talked about this. You can only deal with guilt when you are in an environment in which there are no options. If you have any other option, you as a hunk of protoplasm will go put something on the guilt. You'll put, you know, methylate on it, or you'll go put anything on it. You'll put success on it. You put drugs on it. You put anything on the guilt to keep from dealing with it. Yeah, and all that will do is produce more guilt. Now, what happens here? What is the relationship between guilt and the leaven of Herod, the lack? Guilt, by definition, causes you to believe that you are always in a state of lack. It will not permit you to have peace in any arena of your life because guilt needs to be satisfied, and its tentacles will run into every arena of that's possible in your life. And what it will do is it will not permit you to have rest in any area. In every area, it will cause you to believe that you have lack. And so, the leaven of Herod, it's really a revelator. The leaven of the guilt is really a revelator to cause you to see the blood of Christ so there can be forgiveness for the first time in your life. To know that you are forgiven cannot take place until you are faced with some option that's so awesome for you that you can't face it. You know, you see, otherwise your mind will do something else. If there's any other thing that your mind can do, you won't face guilt. That's why psychology was invented. That's why Ann Landering it happens. That's why group therapy exists. That's why, you know, all the game playing exists. That's why television exists. That's why radio exists. That's why movies exist. It's to cause you to have some other empathy or be able to be in some other state of being other than facing guilt. And when guilt cannot be faced, you'll either do one of two things. You'll either pick up the cross, or when guilt has to be faced, you'll either commit suicide or pick up the cross. Now, so guilt then, back up. Leaven of Herod is a blessing. Where do you see lack? The area in which you see lack is the hole in the wall that if you dig, you'll be able to see the blood of Jesus. And then there will be a door open. You remember that? Where do you see lack? Dig there. Dig until you see the door. I have learned, and the learning of it is by this process. I have learned, in whatsoever state I find myself, therewith to be content. Are you really content tonight? At ease, at peace, lacking nothing. No add-ons required. That's what it means to be content. Stop everything in your mind for a minute and dwell on contentment. Taste it. The absence of anxiety. It's wonderful. And it's available. It's right next to you. And that's what we're about. We're about causing you to see contentment in every possible state of being. Now, what I want you to do between now and the 23rd is I want you to clearly and distinctly and honestly write down a list of where you think there is lack in your life. What do you lack? What do you think you need? In every arena, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, physically, whatever it is. Okay? Let's go to Jeremiah 17. The sin of Judah is written with a pen of iron and with the point of a diamond. It is graven upon the table of their heart and upon the horns of your altars. What's an altar? What's a sacrifice? Spiritually. It's a place of worship. Now, worship is what you give importance to. The horns of the altar are the cardinal points of the altar. And on the horns of the altar, your altars are written with a graven pen, your own sin. In other words, you cannot, whatever you do, whatever, to have an altar and to worship and sacrifice, it's just, to worship means to give importance to give breath to. Whatever it is that you're giving breath to or giving importance to, wherever you look, this out of the side of your eyes, you see the sin, you see the thing, you see your own errors, you see your own lack. And so even your own attempts at worship and building, you know, all your own little things don't work. Because the sin is written on the horns of the altar. Right? It's like Harry. Harry's convinced his point of worship is that if he could just get a certain thing right in a particular day, then he'd be at peace. If he could just finish this agenda. But on the horns of his altar, if he looks out on either side with any kind of a side vision, he sees nothing but murder and carnage and blood. Because he sees and he knows that his agenda isn't, he's never going to be happy by doing something or finishing something. His agenda is only an excuse, it's only a weapon of murder. So the sin is written at the altar upon which he's worshiping. It's real stupid. I mean, we'd never define, that's why, do you understand, do you guys understand what I'm talking about? Whatever it is that you give importance to. It's giving great importance to relationships. All hail relationships. And what does she see? She sees nothing but her own inadequacies and her own on either side, wherever she looks. Whatever it is that you're giving importance to, the sin is there. You understand? It's engraven with the point of a diamond. And you put on blinders, you try to con yourself into not seeing, but it's always there, it's always there, it's always there. Whilst their children remember their altars and their groves by the green trees upon the high hills. You go to worship at a green tree. A green tree, do you understand it's impossible for a human being to not worship at a green tree. The green tree means successful. You can't worship at a place that you think is unsuccessful. You understand? I mean, I'm not talking about what you should or shouldn't do. I'm talking about it's the way of the beast. It's right?
Well, then what does it mean when you're worshiping something negative, like a negative image of yourself or
people? Well, you think that's successful. There's nothing that you can give breath to that you don't think is successful to you as a being. You remember what we said about that, then why it takes something really weird for anybody to want the cross? Because the cross has it's the tree of life, but there are no leaves on it. There's no success on it. It's only failure, it's only shame. The children remember their altars and their groves by the green trees upon the high hills. The high hills always represent the belief system that you're unique. That you're the special one, that you've got a special little deal that you're doing that nobody else understands, and you're going up there to your own little private little place up on the hill, and your own little altar and green tree, and it's like you get your mantra up there. And your mantra has, remember when you were a little kid, you believed in magic, everything? You know, you cast spells on people if they did you wrong.
Like today?
Like today? Did you cast a spell on me today?
Sure. Oh. So bad.
Again, remember, the idea I want you to think about, remember we're studying the leaven of Herod, lack. Your worship, you always run to the place that you think is successful, where you think there's no lack. And it's always after your understanding. O my mountain in the field, I will give thy substance and all thy treasures to the spoil, and thy high places for sin throughout all thy borders. And thou, even thyself, shall discontinue from thine heritage that I gave thee. And I will cause thee to serve thine enemies in the land which thou knowest not. For you have kindled a fire in mine anger which shall burn forever. Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm, whose heart departeth from the Lord. For he shall be like the heath or the shrub in the desert, and shall not see when good cometh, but it shall inhabit the parched places, in the wilderness, in a salt land and not inhabited. In other words, when the good comes, you don't even know it's coming. You don't even see it. You're this stupid little bush. If you ever spend any time in the desert, there's these dumb little bushes. And these bushes, they're really ugly. And they have protected themselves in such a way that they don't even know when it rains. You understand? They've got, in their root system, they've got these weird things on their roots that cause them to save water in the root. And they always look like they're dead, but they don't even know when it rains. They never get green. They never know when anything good comes. Anyway, well, let's keep that in mind. Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh. But her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither cease from yielding fruit. Now we come to an understanding, a metaphor of what it means to be content in whatsoever state you find yourself. A tree planted by the waters that spreadeth out her roots by the river, that shall not see when heat comes. Shall not be careful in the year of the drought. Can you imagine what it would mean not to be careful in the year of a famine or a drought? The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be as a fool. There's a whole bunch more in the 17th chapter, but let's talk a minute about this. This tree that is by the waters and the roots are spreading out. That's all that's happening here to us as a group of people over the years, is that the taproot is going deeper in you so that you're not dependent on sensory perception for your sustenance. You're not dependent on sensory perception for your ability to abide here. The taproot is going deeper and deeper without you knowing it. I mean, just think of the myriad of things that brought you to your knees and tears and frustration that have changed. Or are there any? There was a statement that I read to some of you in the first fruit offering. It came from Jeremiah 31. And it says, as I have watched over you to throw down, to pluck up, to destroy, so now will I watch over you to build and to plant. Because of the fact that there has been abiding, I want you to hear me with something that you can afford to expect the best. You can afford to expect that there will be happiness and joy in your life. You can afford to expect that there will be the lack of anything that you would consider negative. You understand that? The reason that you can, do you understand that let's go to Romans 8. Start in verse 14. Or no, 12. Therefore, brethren, we are not debtors. We are debtors not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. Can you, by any way, begin to see or feel that there may be an advantage not to be a debtor to the flesh? To not to be a debtor to the flesh means that you do not owe the flesh anything. You do not owe it any response. You do not owe it any... And by definition, the flesh are the things that you perceive with your senses. You do not owe it anything. You do not owe it, the only thing I can keep thinking of, I don't owe it any response because I hurt. You understand? I don't have to pay it anything. I don't have to pay it much attention. Sometimes I do, and sometimes I worship it, but I don't have to. I don't have to feel bad if I'm in pain. I don't have to feel hungry if I am fasting. I don't have to feel thirsty if I'm in a drought. There is no thing that your flesh demands that you owe it anything. I don't have to sit back and mull it over and figure it out. I don't have to give an answer to my flesh. I don't have to respond to my flesh. I don't have to feel lonely if I'm alone. I don't have to feel any expected response from any condition that my flesh finds itself in, including expected mental response. You know, I don't have to, if I'm hairy, I don't have to sit back and try to think I'm analyzing it and talk to myself about something if I don't understand something. I don't have to get mad at Oli every day. You understand? I mean, you owe the flesh nothing. If you're a debtor to the flesh, then your mind will always go towards that phenomenon. And you can never understand what it means to cast down imaginations, because you will try to always get the imaginations right instead of casting them down. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations in every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Another way of looking at that every thought to the obedience of Christ is that there is never a thought that is a debtor to the flesh. If you're not a debtor to the flesh, and if you can understand that, then you can be with Christ and with Paul and be in the state of being in that whatsoever you say shall be done for you by my Father which is in heaven. Whatsoever you say, if there's no duality in your thinking or mind. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors not to the flesh to live after the flesh. For if you live after the flesh, you do die. You shall die. But if you through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, you shall live. What does it mean to mortify? It doesn't mean to go into a convent or into a predisposed place of isolation where you just become a, you know, it's like if you're a rabid dog and then you go to a convent and you become a rabid dog with a muzzle. That's not what we're about. We're not about muzzling the rabid dog. We're about transforming the mind of that dog. And that happens when you mortify or see as dead the deeds of the flesh or of the reason. You must have suspected by now, those of you that spend all your time in the mind or in the reason, that the highest the reason can give you is, my sin is scarlet. You mortify the deeds of the flesh, and you live. You mortify them how? How do you mortify something like trying to get alive? You see it as dead. That's an act of faith. If you through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, you shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For you have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. and of children then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Now that's the way how can we not be a debtor? Let's go this way. Can you see the relationship of seeing the leaven of Herod versus being a debtor to the flesh? If you didn't owe the flesh anything, the leaven of Herod would be impossible. If you knew that you didn't owe this body of flesh a damn thing, it would be impossible for you to ever experience lack. And if you knew that there was a feeling that you would perceive as suffering if you did experience lack for a moment, if you knew that that wasn't worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed, then you wouldn't give the suffering a second breath. You would never worship what you considered the suffering or the lack. It wouldn't even be worthy to be spoken. In fact, eventually it would be, as Paul said, it would be, you're even ashamed to speak of those things. He wasn't talking about some sexual perversion. He was talking about the act of trying to figure it out. I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed after. Now go over to verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. How many accepts can you put on that statement? I know that all things work together for good except. I know that all things work together for good except if I'm Harry Oley. I'm convinced that Oley's out to get me and that son of a bitch. Harry got busted this morning if you didn't hear about it.
And it seems so foolish now. It seems so real then.
I know that all things work together for good except those damn times when I feel so righteous in being
yeah.
Poor me.
Why are you looking at me?
All things work together for good, except. Now that except is the basis for the list. That's going to be the leaven. You understand that? All things work together for good except. Now, the reason that those are so difficult is because you are convinced. You are convinced. I mean, this is where you worship. All things work together for good except. Can you give me any exceptions? Except when Oli looks at you.
With those x-ray Norwegian eyes.
All things work together for good except. It's not what it says. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Now you can get yourself in all kinds of shit there. You can say, I don't know if I love God or not, and I don't know if I'm the called according to his purpose. Well, see, that's why you have some idiot like me around. It's my job to tell you, number one, that yes, you do love God, and number two is that you are the called. Okay? I say some pretty bad things to you, but I also say those kinds of things to you. For whom he did foreknow, he foreknew you before the foundation of the world. He also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. And no matter what it is that you think that has happened to you in the past, it's only been necessary, the chisel, to conform you to the image of his Son. That he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. And whom he called, notice, all this is the past tense. Whom he called, them he also justified. You know what justified means? Justified means that you fully accepted the meaning of the blood in every arena of your life. And you never again feel the need to justify yourself in the flesh, because you know that you are manifested in the flesh but justified in the spirit. Just think, Harry, just think of the freedom if you never had to, if you believed you never had to justify yourself again.
Good is being conformed to the image of his Son, and that's not, and that's
the only good,
you know, and that's not what this thing thinks is good, and because it's got a different image.
Whom he justified, them he also glorified. Now the glorified is the end, it's the result, it's what happened at the Mount of Transfiguration. It's when time and space and all laws lost its hold on you. But if you believe this, you're already in that state. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? Again, from this standpoint, if you believe that there is any charge that's justified, then that's part of your leaven. That's part of the except. All things work together for good except. You understand? There's no charge against you. Now, that's a biggie. Most of you have spent a lifetime with people making charges against you, and you believing them, and then responding and manipulating and maneuvering so that you would act like you don't believe them. Mm-hmm. Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It is God that justifieth. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, rather that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God, who shall make intercession for us. Who shall separate us? Remember, we studied the great transgression. There's only one lie in the universe, and that's that you're separate from life. You're separate from God, and you have to work your little butts off to get back there. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or the sword? Remember Christ and the other religions and the ancient Zendavesta and the ancient zoology? Jesus Christ was called the desired of the nations, or the desired of the people. One in whom, if apprehended, every person that had ever lived would never see a need. Remember the manna in the wilderness? It met every possible desire of the heart and desire of the flesh. It met everything, unless there was guilt or idolatry, then the manna tasted bitter. Remember also what manna is? What does manna mean?
What is it?
What is it? Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. That's why we die daily. That's why in the time of the temple, the sin offering was made, the offerings were made constantly throughout the day. We think we want to do it once. We want to pick up the cross once. We die daily. Knowing all these things, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. That is the state of seeing no lack. Romans 8, 28 through 39. That's the desired state. That's the state in which we celebrate Passover. Go to Revelation something. 12, I think. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels. Remember, the dragon was Satan. Remember, we've always established that. And prevailed not, neither was their place any, there was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Now, and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens that dwell in them, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. For the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. Now, if you're an inhabitor of the earth, you're an inhabitor of the wrong place. All that the leaven of Herod is the belief system and its many tentacles that you believe you're separate from the source of life. So let's attack them. Okay? I don't feel like talking anymore. Anybody got anything else? Okay, take it large, person.